Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayer.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we're joined by other comics fans for some lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. Welcome to the sixth annual podcasting panel here at San Diego Comic-Con. My name's John Suntress. I host a podcast called Word Balloon, and we have a great panel, and some of our returning champions have joined us. We got a couple newbies as well. I'm going to start with one of the newbies. They will introduce themselves and give a brief description of their podcast if you haven't listened to their podcast. So we'll start with the gentleman to my right.
All right. My name is Pat Loika, and I am the host of Loika Mania, and it's basically me talking about the stuff I like, and I talk with creators and other people about stuff that we like. That's pretty much all there is to it.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick. Oh, let's clap. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm one of the hosts of iFanboy. We do a weekly audio show and a weekly video show and other straggling other audio shows. A lot of way too many shows for the amount of time there is in the day. And we do iFanboy.com.
Hey, Jimmy Aquino with Comic News Insider, a weekly show covering comics, animation, sci-fi, TV, film, etc.
I'm Brian Christman, one of the co-hosts of Comic Geek Speak. We're about a 3 to 5 time a week podcast about comics, news, reviews, and interviews, and like everybody else, love comics.
I'm John Mayo of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My co-host Bob's over there. We do weekly reviews covering Marvel, DC, and other. We do episodes on what's out in preview, so what's coming up. We talk about sales figures. We do back issue spotlights. Pretty much all comics all the time. Yeah.
I am Cameron Cammy Hathaway. I host Cammy's Comic Corner, the video podcast, and the newly Geeky Talkie audio podcast. And basically, I'll talk about weekly reviews, book of the month reviews, and things you should be checking out if you aren't checking them out already.
Show of hands, anyone who is attending that hasn't listened to a podcast? As always, one, two people, that's fabulous. You're lying, Josh. Josh, one of the fanboy people. And already I've spilled, but that's okay. Basically, this is an opportunity for us to really talk in a roundtable fashion, get together, maybe contrast some ideas and stuff. So much is happening in the comics world, and certainly digital is part of the conversation now. DC stepping up with Day and Date with the new 52, joining Image, and some of the other publishers like Archie and stuff like that. But I guess, Pat, you were at one of the Marvel panels, and apparently Marvel is kind of dipping their toe in Day and Date.
Yeah, it looks like the Spider-Man book, starting with the Spider-Island story, is going to be going Day and Date, and they'll be doing the same with X-Men later this year.
Very cool. And John, on John's podcast in particular, they really look at the direct market, and clearly the idea is that everyone is looking for new readers, and, you know, I guess what's happening, the shrinking direct market, correct, John?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we're getting to where we have DC titles and Marvel titles selling in the 10,000 or under range, you know, on a monthly basis. And when you've got top sellers that are down, you know, around 70, 80,000 and stuff, whereas before there would typically be a number of titles above 100,000. I mean, these publishers need to reach out to digital and to pretty much any audience they can find wherever they can find it. Now, John, you were also at the ICV2 thing yesterday. Did you catch what, I guess it was IDW was saying, that like 3% of their business was digital? So it's growing, but it's still a small part.
But the key to that, though, is it is only 3% of their audience. However, they said that number has doubled since 2011. They also mentioned some Transformer numbers, which was interesting. They did a prequel to the new Transformers movie, I have to think every now and then. And they said that they threw out a 55,000 download number, which, if you know your comic book numbers, is obviously very significant. So, you know, this all reminds me, despite contrary, you know, opinions, this all reminds me of what we went through with Napster 10 years ago. And that, yes, it's the very beginning of digital, but, I mean, you can't deny the digital juggernaut that's coming, as the devices get more sophisticated, the Nook, everything else that's coming along with the iPad. John Root on that same panel said that Android comic downloads are starting to outpace iPad downloads, and the Android devices are getting more sophisticated. So it's, you know, it's this coming audience, and it's been fun to watch the direct market people complain about the encroachment, and that, you know, hey, we're still relevant. Of course they're still relevant. It's the core of the audience, but you've got to include this other audience. So
do people read digital? Clap if you read digital.
Show of hands, or yeah. iPad? Show of hands? iPhone? Okay.
Android?
Nook. Nook now in color, and, you know, more product is being designed for the Nook. Very interesting, you know. And the other encroachment thing that I think some of the direct market people resent is the transmedia connection, as they call it. It used to be called crossing over, you know, 10 years ago when it was all being done in broadcasting. And I think that's fascinating as well, because we've got to face facts that a lot of these new readers are coming for the Burn Notice digital comic, in fact, that DC just made for USA Network. And it's fun to kind of watch these little initiatives. And they're, you know, people are getting used to, I think, the storytelling format. And if it's done well, and what's the difference that I've noticed, and I don't know about you guys, but they're involving creators. I mean, we saw it with Dark Horse, with Buffy and Joss Whedon's direct involvement, along with other writers. And that's the kind of thing that didn't happen 20, 30 years ago. Bob, you know, too, because you read back in the past. I mean, you know, people would try with Charlton and some of these older publishers to do knockoff books. That's what they were. They were knockoffs. There's more legitimacy to, I think, a lot of these digital tie-ins.
All right, clearly John has some thoughts on the subject. But,
sorry.
do you guys? What do you guys?
Well,
you guys?
Yes, I do. Thank you for asking. actually, one of the things of the transmedia that's worth pointing out is what IDW did with the Star Wars movie and the Star Wars Countdown comic, which was essentially the campfire scene with Spock and stuff. All those events that he was recounting were in the comic, so they're trying to get it a lot more integral and stuff. The other thing, though, is I think we're still at the forefront of the digital, where there are a lot of people sampling this, maybe not as many people buying this. So I don't know that the business model has really proven itself out yet.
Well, no one knows what it is. I mean, iFanboy is owned by a digital comics company, and we know better than anyone that it's still evolving. What people want and what the technology will give hasn't really matched. You know, you were talking about Android. The new devices, the Nook is really popular with comics. The devices that keep changing. No one, it's not set yet, basically, what the point is. And the fact that 3% is only the IDW sales is good, considering how much product there is out there, how much selection. The books people want aren't really available yet. When DC does it, it'll be the first time books people actually actively want will be available to get digitally.
One thing I noticed too quickly, and I'll try to be quick, is what's missing from digital comic purchases versus music purchases is the one-click purchase of a full story. And the publishers seem very hesitant to put that product out. And that, I think, might be a barrier for someone who wants to come in and read a full story. I'm wondering about this mythic audience, this untested audience, and when they spend their $3.99 on a new DC book or $2.99, are they going to be bummed that it's only a first chapter and not a full story?
I've got another question about the barrier to entry is, what's the cheapest iPad-like device or whatever that would be a suitable reader for this? What's the cost to entry on that?
I would imagine a smartphone, right, guys?
So, well,
but that's assuming people only want to read on a tablet. There's lots of people read on the desktop. It's much bigger than you'd think.
They mentioned that again at the ICV2 thing, and it was sounding like, for at least I think it was IDW, they were saying like 1% or whatever, most was on the mobile.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
It's different for everything,
yeah,
but there's lots of people who read on the desktop.
Okay,
it's the Wild West, as they said yesterday.
Like I said, it's
evolving.
But even
that desktop is going to cost a couple $100s,
yeah, but,
or something.
Dude, I have a mini laptop, and I can get digital comics on that. It's under $200.
My only point is that's going to cut out a certain portion of the potential audience, just because you've got to pay the cost to get that reading device versus, you know, you spend $2.99, you've got the comic, you don't need any additional technology to go read that.
What I think, you mentioned potential audience, and I think the potential audience is already here. What we find on iFanboys, if we talk about a book that isn't from Marvel or DC or Image, half the audience can't get it. They have no access to it. The store doesn't carry it.
Yep.
Their little store they have to drive an hour to doesn't get anything but Marvel and DC. There are books that Oni Press and IDW and Boom put out right now that people want to buy but can't. And that's the companies that should really be jumping on this and taking advantage of it. Because their audience is here. They want to buy books. They're already buying books. They can't do it.
Well, and I mean, I think publishers are afraid of cannibalizing the audience that might get to them, you know, fine. If not, if they can't get to a store, they are online. They can go and buy it from Amazon. You know, I mean, it's, they can buy it obviously from the publisher's websites. It was interesting hearing about Dark Horse and how involved they're getting with digital, not only for an American audience, but really, a global audience in terms of their plan is to really get comics going in seven different languages. And I think that's very forward thinking. And, you know, it's very interesting hearing how they're all doing it. Like I said, it's a wide open frontier. And what other experiences? Again, I want to know what everybody else thinks. I just think it's important to be able to buy an ebook version of a comic arc and really have that one button purchase of whatever. Maybe their problem is that they're afraid of determining an ebook price for a 6-issue arc and they want to sell it piecemeal. I see a question, Ari, please.
Yeah, iTunes has the season pass. You buy that, but you only get that in installments. I mean, that's a possible solution.
Well, I don't know. That's where I go back to the business model hasn't really worked itself out yet, and whether they can do season passes or stuff like that without encroaching on the print, you know, sales and stuff is really going to be what the game changer will be. Whoever figures that out first successfully is going to do really well.
Sir?
Like what you were saying, smaller markets, smaller companies that might be the way in.
Sure. And middle market people like Comixology and Graphically and Panelfly and all these other stores obviously put them all on the same shelf, much like a virtual newsstand. The other initiative that I see that's interesting is Marvel and Starbucks relationship. And I really wanted to ask John Root and some of the other publishers if they're going to get those kind of things, because that's great to like just walk in, connect to your Wi-Fi, and immediately, hey, you want to buy a Marvel comic? It's right here.
Hey, John, you're going to want to repeat some of these questions because they're not going to be.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Bobby. So, yeah, someone was just asking about if, you know, small publishers will be able to obviously get, you know, additional footing on the, you know, on the virtual newsstand along with the big four. And that's a possibility. And again, I think it's these intermediates that will help. So, yes, I will moving forward.
I really think the smaller publishers is where digital is going to help out the most because, like these guys are saying, not all comics are in all stores. Not all stores are in all locations. So if a small press publisher can put their stuff up on the web and suddenly it's available to everybody who's got an internet connection, a mobile device, or anything they can read it on, I mean, that really lowers the barrier to entry versus can they convince, you know, all of these comic store owners and stuff to rack their book.
Everyone's stunned. All right. We'll move on. I also think that, again, I think as much as some of us roll our eyes at these licensed comics, I think that is an entry point. And the interesting thing that came out of the IVC2 panels yesterday was that they're creating these virtual stores for properties like Star Wars, Star Trek, Transformers. And when you go to buy the movies at iTunes, there's also options to buy, obviously, digital comics as well. And it's nice to see all that stuff up there. I just think that's an interesting access point for people who maybe have never tried comics. Sir?
What's your opinion on the price points that you chose?
The price points that the comics are at right now. I think that's going to change. I think, guys, let's all go down the list.
Well, it's $2.99 for DC, right? That's what they're doing?
Right.
$1.99 after a month?
Yeah. Yes.
They don't sell enough to really make it 99 cents. They won't make any money off it at first. They have to sell a lot more copies of the book. I mean, people want 99 cents, and I want to pay 99 cents. For God's sakes, I buy so many books. But they don't sell enough at them. And they don't know how many they're going to sell. So right now, they don't want to piss off the stores. There's all kinds of things that go into play with pricing. It's not a simple solution. There's also a lot of costs involved people don't realize. So there's a lot of things that come into play with pricing, I think.
No other thoughts. I'd also point out, though, that much like iTunes, when it first came out, I remember 10 years ago, CDs cost $20 and now are $15. And so suddenly the price has dramatically gone down 25%.
Well, I think the publishers are kind of caught in a bind because they can't go to the lower price, even if it were viable and profitable, because, again, that would undercut the print sales. That's their main revenue stream right now. This is a business. They got to stay in business to create the content. So, I mean, with DC going day and date with price parity for the first month, I mean, that's the only choice they really had.
Yeah. Hey, Pants, I want to get you in the conversation because you're one of those guys that, you know, was really bummed about DC going to back to, you know, this soft reboot that they're in the process of.
Well, relaunch, whatever.
Relaunch, excuse me. Yes, Gail Simone corrected me the other day. Relaunch, excuse me. So, but it sounds like you kind of changed your mind.
Yeah, I have warmed up to it. I had a knee-jerk reaction to it because I've been reading for a long time, and just I'm steeped in the history of DC Comics. And I just this relaunch just had me just I don't know, I don't like it. Just you know, so many things are getting rid of, like the JSA, for instance. The JSA, I'm a big fan of JSA, and they're not going to be around in the new DC from what we hear.
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, there's a phase two coming behind this 52 initial titles.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's kind of been hinted that I think a lot of things that may not be part of this initial 52. But Pants, you and I are kind of the same age, and it surprises me because at this point
you're 35?
We've been through and we've been through so many relaunches that if anything, I always kind of it's a fun change. It's we're it's an opportunity to kind of get rid of the baggage and be able to kind of approach these characters fresh again. And it's an inevitability. It's been happening since, you know, Superman came out in 38. In 49, Siegel and Schuster did a new origin of Superman, and it was a lot longer than the two pages that was in Action.
Right. I sort of made myself think, well, wait a minute. This has been going on for years. You had the Silver Age. You brought all the Silver Age heroes back. So that's what I went to and said, this has been going on for years and years, maybe in smaller chunks, not as big as this. So that's how I rationalize how I'm going to go on with this.
Well, did you guys read pre-crisis and stuff off the rack?
Sure.
I mean, I certainly
did. I did not know.
Okay, so for me, I'm at the point where, you know, I'm excited and interested in this new relaunch and stuff, but having read pretty much the entirety of the DC Universe, you know, depth and breadth and stuff, since that relaunch, through a few minor tweaks and updates and stuff, for them now to be feeling like they're kind of sort of cutting the cord, but not quite, and restarting, you know, I have had to ask myself, do I want to continue with it or not, or is it a good jumping off point? And the fact that that question even came up, I think, is unfortunate.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's like everyone's going to bitch and moan about it, but they're going to buy them.
Exactly.
It's gonna you're going to buy them. I mean, you bitch and moan, you're going to buy them. And here's the thing. Jim Lee actually said, did you expect
that? That's what we do, man.
I was talking, like, we were on Twitter, going back and forth, and I sort of just, you know, put it out there saying something about, like, well, what's the sense? Should we even continue with the DC Comics now until the relaunch? What's the sense if they're relaunching, or what's the relaunch? And he said, because they're good stories.
Amazing.
And that's a good thing. It's like, if they're good stories, they're good stories.
Who's reading Flashpoint out there? A lot of hands, okay.
I like Flashpoint.
Batman's great. I know you guys have been on iFanboy. They've been loving it, and we're all loving it.
Our lawyer said not to talk about that Batman story. that's the question. What are you reading the books for? If it's to be...
entertaining.
Exactly, entertainment. Yeah. Or is it to keep up with the fabric of the universe, or is it just read a good story?
And, yeah.
I mean, that's to me, there's
can't
no question.
Can't I have both?
You can have both, but that, I mean, that's...
No, you cannot.
It's a bizarre question to me to even ask. Why continue reading if you're not... Yeah. I mean, the whole point is to have fun.
Yeah. It's to have fun, but my thought on continuity is if the creators don't have enough respect to have been reading the material and taking it seriously and kind of playing by the rules that were set, you know, and are just kind of throwing them out willy-nilly, you know, why should I care?
Well, because you're enjoying the story, right?
It's not respect. I don't think it's disrespect, though, man.
No.
It's not disrespect. Again, I think it's – you got after a while, things get – the Lois and Clark marriage, which has been fun – has been going on for 20 years. I welcome a single Superman again because I miss Lana Lang being, you know, to
come on, we all want to hook up with Wonder Woman.
Characters.
Please.
What up?
Why not? I mean, I think what it is also is like, you know, it's, we keep forgetting it, like we call it, it's entertainment. You know, it's not like it's history where we take a time machine and go back and change the line of the Tudors in England. Like, what though? What happened?
That'd be awesome, though.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool. No Elizabethan age. Great. You know, and, but now, you know, it's entertainment, and it's unfortunate because you do become very close to certain characters, certain books. It can't, it's disappointing. But at the same time, you know, it's like I look forward to a lot of the new stuff. You know, I'm questioning some of the new stuff. Like, oh, that's a curious character to bring about. But I look forward to see what they can do with it. And if it's entertaining, it may surprise you, you know.
Didn't Marvel do the same thing 10 years ago, piecemeal? I mean, essentially. I mean, I remember those first five Jemis Quesada years, and they essentially said, we're going back to the basics of these characters. They didn't really come out and say reboot. There was certainly the Ultimate line. Well, but yeah, even the in the 616.
There's going back to the basics, and then there's actually changing the history. And what they look to be doing with the DC relaunch, and again, we haven't seen it, so who knows, is rolling back to about 5 years into the history, meaning most of the junior characters aren't going to have existed, like Pants was saying about the JSA, which I'm a big fan of too. Not going to be there. So there are going to be fundamental differences. That's not a back-to-basics storytelling approach or characterization aspect. That's changing the rules of the game, essentially. And they're welcome to do that, but there are risks involved, is all I'm saying.
People, pro or con? Pro DC relaunch. Clap. Con DC relaunch.
Oh.
Interesting.
Couple.
Anybody going to drop the books entirely because of the relaunch?
Yeah, raise hands. Anybody drop?
You're haters? Lying if you do.
Other than mail?
You're lying.
Anyone go to that
anybody, is there anybody who didn't read DC before that's now going to pick up DC books because of the relaunch? And that's why they're doing it.
That's exactly that's why. The whole point.
That's why they're doing it.
Yeah.
But they had to because they were nothing they did changed their market share.
Yeah.
Nothing.
They're not going after market share.
They have to increase sales somehow.
Well, they want sales, but they don't want market share.
Well, that's the same.
Fallacy, no, it's not the same. The fallacy with the market share is it's how big of a slice of the pie do they have. That pie changes drastically from month to month. It can go up by a million or something. So DC can actually lose market share and gain sales.
Sure, but the point is they had to do something to increase their sales. Sales weren't going up no matter what. Holding the line didn't change anything.
But they're trying to go after the right kind of sales, I think,
yeah.
Where they're trying to grow readership.
Yes, exactly. They're going outside the Wednesday crowd.
I mean, if they wanted to grow dollar sales, like you said, with the hold the line at $2.99, there's no way they would have done that.
Yeah.
Well, with that, this reminds me of an interview I did recently with Don Rosa, where he talked about how the market was basically killed. You know, because it used to be, you know, multi-market, you get it in your 7-Eleven, you get it on the local newsstand. Now it's just local comic shops, which, of course, we love and support our local comic shops. But that did kill the, you know, market. Like, well, so with this new launch, will they start putting them out back on the racks, like at a newsstands or at 7-Elevens?
Or the replacement
exactly.
Rack.
Yeah, that's the thing. I really think print innovations in terms of new markets, good luck. I don't know. I mean, I really think another reason why the newsstand model dropped for a lot of reasons was that the price point was too low and they weren't getting enough of a return on the newsstand. It's funny that Archie, however, is that sole, you know, publisher that stuck with that.
I'm so impressed with the stuff Archie's doing. I really am. It's really, really
they're aggressive. Yeah, so both great. Creatively and marketing-wise. So yeah. Absolutely.
Got a question over here.
Please.
Yeah. There are comic titles that are released in, you know, multi-story, like magazine releases, where you have multiple stories in one magazine, weekly, it might be monthly. Is that the sort of format that these major companies do?
The question is, would the publishers move to a weekly format where it's more of an anthology and there are, you know, several stories, kind of like Shonen Jump, I'm guessing you're thinking.
Or 2000 AD.
2000 AD, you know, exactly.
Which is actually coming to the States finally, so weekly. So
yay. I've heard rumors of a digital initiative that resembles that by the two major publishers. I haven't actually seen a product come out yet, but I keep hearing that those kinds of things are being considered and stories are being created for that kind of format. Because the other thing about the iTunes model that worries me is that 30-day wait for the next chapter. And because they keep saying it's like a TV show. No, it's not. It's you've got to wait 30 days, and again, you've only got one chapter. It's not a, you know, it depends how you look at the experience of reading a single issue. And I don't know if, I mean, with eBlast, sure, you can be reminded, but I'm not sure what's going to happen. Sir?
Yeah, when it comes down to digital, you know, just hoping folks be like a grab from the readers. And they're going to have to get accustomed to the idea of one issue a month. What do you think delaying issues is really going to cause an effect on it? So, they're like, I'm ready for the next issue of the month. Not on my iPad, 2 months, not on my iPad, 6 months, and how it shows up.
Like waiting for that Angry Birds update.
Yeah, there's a concern if the books fall behind on schedule and they don't show up every 30 days at Clockwork, will that hurt interest? Sure it will, and obviously DC's trying to shore up their, you know.
They've been stockpiling issues before this launch, but that's of course the killer, right? It kills regular paper sales. People drop books when they don't come out, so that's, they're going to have to be cognizant of the fact that if they want to get some random guy who's hasn't read comics in 30 years or has never read comics, they got to have the books come out.
Or be prepared for an art change, because that's another thing they're doing is that, you know, hey, if you are late, someone else will finish your issue for you.
Now, does that apply to...
What kind of use to art changes and the occasional delay, you know, when it comes
Yeah, is that going to be a barrier for a new reader?
This kind of makes it exciting and scary because no one really knows any of the answers to any of these questions. And we're gonna find out in a few months.
Now, Jim Lee is like making sure, yeah, this is like no more late books. You know, we're not going to F this up. But does that apply to him too? Because he's going to be on the new Justice League relaunch. But, you know, is he just going to stick around maybe for three issues and then, you know, do layouts and then just completely be off the title as well? Like, how are they going to hold him to account too? Anything.
Well, he's the boss.
Having somebody. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but who's going to go up to the boss and go, I'm sorry, but you're screwing up?
Well, he's been on Twitter saying, believe me, I'm not going to screw this up. Yeah. I'm sure they all know what's riding on this. I felt this. I'm sure all of us who are indoctrinated in DC know, when they said Jeff Johns and Jim Lee on Justice League for this initiative, we're like, that's good, but is he going to be on time? Because when is, you know, the track record speaks for itself. Sir.
I had a question about with the push for digital now. Do you think that actually presents an exciting opportunity for you guys as podcasters, because you guys are digital? You guys already put out your stuff through downloads. There's kind of a, I don't know, to me it seems like there's kind of a relationship that could be there. Is that something that would excite you guys?
Yes. With my video review show, I am literally scanning books every weekend. And while all my friends are out partying and whatnot, I'm slaving away behind a scanner. And so just the mere fact of this being accessible to me, being able to just copy and paste, as it were, just to make my job a lot more easier, I'm so looking forward to this day and date release. So yes, I'm very all for it.
You know, we want to throw it open to questions. And honestly, we can talk about podcasts.
We'll keep babbling until they kick us out.
I want to go back to her question when she talked about the anthologies like that. Like, because you see something like 2000 AD that works in the UK. And they've tried it here. Like, DC's tried it. Marvel's tried it.
Anthologies don't tend to work here.
That's the thing. It just doesn't tend. Like, Dark Horse is bringing back their Dark Horse Presents, but at $8.
I was going to say, you know, yeah, the deciding factor is the price.
Yeah.
But if you have a choice, though, I mean, that's the thing. Like, DC and Marvel and even Dark Horse has done it with limited things. 2000 AD, that's how you get 2000 AD proper, you know, comics. If you want to read that stuff, that's how it comes out. You don't have a choice.
But I think at the price point we're at now, the anthology thing just doesn't work. I mean, I think part of why DC rolled back to the $2.99 is that additional dollar for that 10-page backup story. That's great if you're interested in both the lead story and the backup story. But if you only want the lead, you're paying a dollar more for 10 pages you don't really care about.
Yeah.
If you only want the backup story, you're paying, you know, $2.99 more for a lead you don't care about. It's a losing proposition.
That's what we talked about when we reviewed the Dark Horse Presents. The first one, there was like, what, 8-10 stories in it?
Yeah.
For $8? It's like, oh, that's a lot of – I mean, it's a good deal if you think about it. But it's just like it could have done without 3 or 4 stories. You know, and just cut the price down to $4.99.
Yeah.
You know?
Interviews with Frank Miller. To see, rather than them go with the anthology stuff, take something like these 10-page backup stories, go with the slimline format, put that out for $1.50 or something like that.
Or digitally for 99 cents. That's your, you know, possible model. So,
yeah.
More questions,
General.
Sir?
I had a comment just on the bottom of something you were saying earlier about stuff formatted for mobile devices, Android, iPad, whatever. The black market for digital comics is certainly not a mobile device market. You know?
No.
There's gajillions of scanned comics, you know, floating around, and those people aren't reading.
We're talking about bootlegging comics, obviously, much in the same way as all media.
Bootlegging, you're right. Bootlegging shows, clearly people will read them on their computer screen. Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Sir,
just
Rob.
Follow up on driving new readership. I think that's key to the digital initiative. What are you guys' thoughts on how they're going to how to attack that new market? Because a lot of stuff that sells to comic shops, we know what sells to comic shops. We want to find some new people. How do we do that?
Well, yeah, Bob just asked about getting a new audience that, you know, maybe doesn't care about the product that comes out in the direct market, and how do we get this new audience? One thing obviously that came up yesterday was the fact that a lot of the successful digital properties seem to be ones that are tied to other media properties like Transformers, Star Wars, Star Trek. I mean, it is like the Burn Notice comic. It's really good, and it's because Matt Nix, the creator, much like Joss Whedon on Buffy, had a direct hand in it. I mean, that's the thing. It's really making it matter and letting this digital audience know you love the show or you love the movie. Well, here's a sliver of the story that you didn't get, just like John's example that he told earlier. Falling Skies, the new TNT show. They got Paul Tobin to work with Mark Verheiden. Mark, you might remember, is a writer of comics as well as a television producer. And they came up with the prequel to Falling Skies, and it was great. It really read well, and it was on the Turner website. Any thoughts, Patrick? Pat has none.
Well, you saw DC put they're putting a lot of genre books out, which they never would have in the past. Now they've got a horror book, they got a vampire book, they got a western book. I mean,
I'm excited.
They're gonna try to pull people in that way. There's there's superheroes are not going to save the market.
Well, and what I want to know from the digital side, guys, and is you got to get to where those people are. Like crime fans, wherever they, you know, congregate online, I hope DC is out there and says, hey, if you like crime books, check out these titles. If you like military, like Soldier of Fortune, I guess. If you like paramilitary stories, check out these stories.
What they ought to do with that one in particular is for all of the servicemen overseas and stuff.
Absolutely.
Give them a free digital account.
That sounds good.
Had people coming back from past wars, you know, getting hooked on smoking, drinking, whatever. Let's get them hooked on comics.
No, I think you're right, man. I mean, you know, I use this example all the time. Tim Truman had a Western book 15 years ago, couldn't get it sold to any of the publishers. He self-published it, went to Cowboy and Western magazines, advertised there, and made a profit. So, I mean, it can be done. It's the right partners. I mean, that's the key success to any digital thing is the partnerships that you make in terms of exposing your product to other markets potentially.
Well, just real quick on that, if you do want to send comics to troops, there's plenty of sites out there you can look. I think there's one, is it anysoldier.com or something like that, where send comics to, and it's a great, there's a whole list of, they're all over the world, and you can find where you can send comics, and there's a lot of them out there that want them, because they ask for a specific one sometimes, or just they just want
just
a whole bunch.
It just seems with the day and date digital and stuff that it would cost, you know, some of these companies next to nothing to do it.
Sure.
Do you think the publisher can start to use the digital arena as more of a test arena, meaning new ideas just digitally, not print, and see what takes off?
Will the publishers use the digital market as a test ground for products solely in the digital market?
I think that's going to happen once the digital market's proven itself out. I mean, the same sort of question could be asked of going direct to a collected edition with something like a Superman Earth 1. We do see that, but we don't see that often. And part of it is the revenue model just doesn't, you know, work out as well.
Are they doing that right now with Fear Itself, the Worthy? Weren't they releasing some of those issues only digitally?
Marvel has done a couple of things where they'll release digitally and then do it as a backup feature in Spider-Man or One-Shot or something like that.
Okay.
And some of the early ones of that from about a year or so back, the quality I thought was really, you know, in the art a little questionable. Again, because what's going to pay for the content creation? And if they can't do that off the digital sales, and at least at that point they couldn't, you know, they've got to budget accordingly.
Sir?
Actually, off of Cameron's point, what he's saying is they released the Fear Itself like 8 pages just beforehand, and they had the actual writers, or some current writers like Jeff Parker, do an issue as well, too, so they tied some actual names to it. If they just write an extra, just write an extra few pages, like in this case, or something. But if they do that onto a story they've already written, maybe that is a way.
Didn't they do that with Secret Invasion or Civil War with like a Nick Fury lead up? I think it was Secret Invasion.
There's also a prelude to Spider Island that was released as a free comic book, but also released digitally as a free comic book. And Dan Slott wrote it, and it's, you know, the kind of, it's like a nice 10-page story. So that's a possibility. But, you know, again, it's that question of, do you want the digital market to just be a sampling thing, or do you want it to be...
Now, they talk yesterday at the ICB2 thing that a lot of it on the Android seemed to be a lot of people sampling versus purchasing, whereas on the iTunes and iPod market, it seemed to be more purchasing and stuff?
Yeah, it's what you know, what options are the publishers giving other than sampling? I mean, that's the thing. They throw out so many sample products that, well, it looks like it's really more of a sampling market. And it's like, well, that's all you're really giving out. If you're not really giving them concrete stories to buy, then your, you know, expectations are limited.
We talked a lot about the business side of digital. One thing we haven't talked about is the creative side. And I was at Boston Comic Con earlier in the year, and Darwin Cook spoke, and he said his next creator-owned project is going to be digital only. And he's really going to utilize the format. He's going to have like embeddable maps to follow the characters along where they are. Things that you can't do in paper. It now you can do a lot more things. You can put in audio files. You can do all kinds of things that you can never do. And I think the right creators can really utilize the format and have something really different with comics.
Well, and I know Mark Waid's going, you know, very much in that digital direction. And I think it's cool to be able to add that extra stuff. But at what point does it stop being comics and become something else? And that something else may be very cool. But again, you know, you start adding limited animation, you're just shy of a cartoon or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, animation is one thing.
But no, what Connor's describing, I think, can still qualify as comics. So,
well, to embellish on that, because I was at that panel that he did at Heroes Con where Darwin talked about it, and we talked about it, and he said, like, if you hit a certain character, it'll give a background on that character. It won't necessarily be. There might be some sound, but it's mostly like it'll give a bio or go into another world. It'll explain more of what's going on.
So kind of a right-click context.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I think that I would love.
We have some supplemental
content. Yeah. I mean, our company graphically does that already with books we have. Is you can click on characters and get information.
That's great. I love that.
We've experimented
plus
with
the commentaries too.
We have audio commentaries like for DVDs. We do that with comics. There's a lot of things you can do to sort of enhance the digital experience and make it more interesting than just the paper.
And I'm all for that kind of stuff. Yeah. That sounds great.
Let's get the lady over
I would be more likely to buy comics than on anything else because I get away from the tethered to the computer thing, but I get the color and I can grow it if I want to look at the art closer. It's got a lot of features that make that appealing. You didn't have that.
I think it's like turning around a big boat. You know, changing the market's not easy. Comics are very nimble, more than most media, but even this is beyond that.
We're at the early stages. We'll see what develops. Sir?
Just kind of a follow-up on the creativity. What do you see, where do you see it being maybe in 2 years, you know, with technology and different things? What would sort of be your dream kind of comics that you would want to see feature-wise?
Honestly, what Darwin has been describing, I think, is a great thing. I mean, because it's right now, the publishers mostly are taking the book format and just putting it out digitally, and they're not thinking about panels and you know, I heard Chris Niesman on one of his podcasts say that a lot of times a double page spread is almost a disappointment, whereas it looks so great in print, but then all of a sudden I have to turn your iPad or whatever tablet you're looking on, and suddenly the page is reduced. It's like, ah, you know, I mean, and then, all right, let me expand it. So, you know, that's a question of really that kind of story structure. Will that change? And I hope that the smarter graphic people, you know, kind of think of this.
I'd like to see them get that kind of a freedom to away from the limitations of the physical page. But the big freedom I'd like to see the creators get is away from the is it going to be profitable or not question with print. I mean, there's still some issues around that with digital and stuff, but if it can be to where Mark Waid or really any of these creators that are downstairs that are capable of doing just some brilliant stuff, but some of it they know just isn't quite going to sell in the current market, if they could get to where, hey, they just release it, do it, and it does well for them, that's where we're going to see a true comics renaissance, because it allows them to just get unleashed and go wild.
Who's read Alex DeCampi's Valentine? Anybody? Nobody. Wow. Let me tell you, Alex DeCampi did this story Valentine and did this before the tablet and really figured out how to tell stories in different ways. It's pretty amazing and really you should look for it. You can find it free online. So there are creators out there. It's just not, unfortunately, a mainstream product. But she's done very well, and not only in the American market, but worldwide because she put it in several languages. It's so a lot of creators are starting to think about that format and changing things. Seriously, do yourself a favor and check out.
So we have about 15 or so minutes. So any questions? It doesn't have to be about digital. It can be.
Yeah.
If you have anything you want.
And, you know, honestly. Sir?
I'm actually thinking of starting my own podcast next week.
Don't do it. We got it. Let's go.
Yeah. Go video. It's so much easier.
The best thing I can advise you as far as podcasts go is talk about something you like. You know, don't talk about don't do a podcast just to kind of complain or be mad at something. Just talk about what you like and have fun. That's what you know. That's all you need to worry about.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Pat just said. And really, coming from radio, where you always have to worry about the next commercial break, good for you for trying to do something long form, because I really think that is it's an alternative to standard broadcasting. And I think keep that in mind and allow yourself the ability to let a conversation flow and, you know, or whatever subject you want to do. I mean, that's the thing. Hey, man, if you want to talk for 2 hours about Transformers or something or whatever subject you want, crime books, whatever, go for it, man, because other people will be enthused by your enthusiasm and get excited about it.
Do it because you like it and have fun, because it's a lot of work and it won't be a lot of reward. So if you do it, if you're going to spend the time to do it and do it right, then make sure you're having fun doing it and you like doing it, because that'll both be the most rewarding thing about it.
Especially if you're doing solo, it's like it's a lot more to it than people think. Oh, you just turn the mic on, record. No, there's, you know, editing. Well, not, but, you know, like putting graphics up and, you know, researching things and whatever. It's a lot of work, but it's, again, I love it, so I don't have an issue with it. So.
And make sure you partner with other people who you know to get the word out about your podcast. People know about it, know where to find it. Otherwise, you're talking to yourself.
Yeah, there's a lot of value in having a co-host. I guarantee you we would not have the 500 episodes out if it wasn't for Bob helping me do it. Just having somebody to bounce the ideas off of and to keep the momentum going, it's a huge help. But do it because you can't not do it. It's a huge time investment. It's a lot of fun and stuff, but it can be very draining. So get caught up in your sleep now, because you may not have time later.
I'll just say join a couple of message boards. Just keep it keep it fresh. Like these characters are saying, it helps to have different people on, because then it gives a different perspective as well and keeps people intrigued, and they might even email you that they want so-and-so back on.
When you say join a couple message boards, can you utter
the message
boards?
Yes.
If you're just at one message board in particular, everyone might know you by then. But if you're part of several communities, and that's the great thing about comic books in particular, is just everyone's friends online sometimes. And there's so many different outlets where you can go and share certain loves of the medium. But back on topic of the message boards, just try, depending on what your subject is, there's going to be an audience somewhere. You just need to find that niche.
Yeah, if you have guests, those guests likely have websites or message boards. Go there. And, I mean, that's what I did to grow my audience and stuff. I went to the creators' websites themselves. Hey, if you like this guy, here's an hour-long interview and stuff. So, yeah, find like-minded people. And be weekly. Try to be weekly, because it's really important to have a new product out there. And that's what I'm talking about with this 30-day stuff. 7 days is, you know, pretty much the limit.
On a recent podcast session, my fanboy Ron got an email that was read, and it was it was great.
It was very easy to do.
But I was going to ask the panel, when you started getting an audience and you got that first mail that really kind of attacked your opinion, how did that make you feel? Did it make you feel good that I have a listener?
An angry listener.
It made you start to realize people are taking what I'm saying.
For me, the big thing wasn't so much getting a letter or whatever, but getting a magazine article published basically saying I was destroying the comic industry by reporting on sales. It definitely made me feel, oh. I mean, it's both good and bad, because people are listening. People are not going to agree with what you say. And I think having somebody come back with a critical response saying they spent some time and thought about what you said, I mean, what more can you ask for? I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Sure, you get frustrated at first, like, oh God, you know, differ opinion. But then if you, like you're saying, it makes you think that, yeah, they really put some time and effort into making sure you know how they feel. And so if they ever tell you that they're never going to listen again because of some certain thing that you introduced, they're going to listen. They want to see if you're going to even mention them in the next episode, kind of thing. So, you know, it's just one more for the,
I don't know if they put a lot of time and effort into it. I think they knee-jerk react a lot. So it's like, and I've had several people will knee-jerk react to maybe an interview I did, because it might be somebody they really love and they didn't like how I talked to the person. They felt I was either too comfortable with them or just, you know, who do I think I was even talking to them. And so I like to write back. And it sometimes throws them off. And quite often I'll get an apology. No, I don't ask for one. I just explain. I go, hey, I'm sorry you felt that way, but this happened, blah, blah, why. You know, I don't know why you felt that way, but you're entitled to your opinion. But I hope, you know, you give us a chance again and listen again. Well, maybe it will be better for you. And quite often I've gone, oh, I'm sorry. I just kind of reacted. I really love that person. And, you know, and other times they're like, I still hate you. Bye. So, you know, whatever. It's cool. I can take it.
You're putting an opinion out there. So, yeah, be prepared for a counter opinion. Hey, man, I break bad on my fellow podcasters and we'll go on the message boards and go, you're way out of line, or I didn't like what you said. And I don't do that to be a jerk, but coming from sports radio, there's more than one opinion. And I think it's good to have people that think to the contrary, because it's only going to inspire more discussion. And I think that's a good thing.
All right, we got 5 minutes, so who's got a good one?
Let me jump in real quick on that. I mean, that what John was saying, that's why I have a co-host, is to have that differing opinions. There are times Bob and I have diametrically different opinions on a comic and stuff, and, you know, there may be some friction there or whatever, but it's a good kind of friction, because I'm not the be-all, end-all expert on comics. He's not. In between the two, our listeners are going to find either something that comes out of that discussion, or they'll agree with one of us or whatever. And again, that's all what it's about.
All right. Who's got a good final question?
Who has a great final question?
Awesome.
Okay. It seems incestuous.
Move on.
Who's got a real good question?
Sir?
Commando.
How hard was it trying to figure out a time to end the podcast, like the length of the podcast? Did you set time, or did you just end whenever you're done talking about what you decided to talk about?
My current episode of Word Balloon is 3 hours and 50 minutes long.
Yeah, people love that.
That's not a lie. Exactly. And people do love it.
We found our size organically. we found our length organically. There's nothing.
Yeah, I like to. Yeah, please go on.
We our show started in a low like 20 minutes, and then it became an hour, and we found an hour was a really good time. Everybody's shows are different, but for us, we feel like we're in and out in an hour. We don't hang around too long. We're not babbling for too long. So I think we just sort of came to it. It took about a year to find that spot, and now that's where. Everything is dirty.
Yeah, we've tried to, at one point, we're like, okay, we'll do an hour, but then, like, we'll have guests on. We want, you know, I don't like limiting my interviews if I'm talking to somebody, you know, that's, I feel it's a lot to say. And then sometimes we'll break it into two or three parts, but sometimes we'll play the whole interview, and it makes the episode 2 hours long, because the interview is an hour and a half, you know, but it's a great interview, I think, so, and people seem to enjoy that. So we don't have a set time in ours. Maybe we should, but we don't.
We sort of have one because we do three episodes a night, so we have to, you know, stop at some point and get the next episode up. But usually about an hour, hour and a half is what our comfort zone is for us.
For us, we talk until we're done. Sometimes it goes for a while, sometimes it doesn't. We've had, like, the weekly spotlight sometimes go 30 minutes, sometimes go over an hour. It depends how much we've got to say about a particular book, how long the book is, stuff like that. I mean, talk while you have something to say and when you're done.
I host the videos on YouTube, and way back when, their limit used to be 10 minutes, and so that was kind of my cap. I wanted to make sure I could get an episode up, and that's actually why I talk so fast in the episodes, or in the earlier ones especially, I wanted to get everything in, but eventually they capped it at like 15 or 20. But for the audio ones, when we started out, it was just on end, like maybe 50 to an hour. And some people wrote in and said, listen, it's good, but it could be shortened down a little. So we try to get it around maybe 30 minutes to maybe 40 minutes. If it's an interview, closer to an hour, because it might be interesting.
This is based on a hobby that we're all compulsive about, and that's why I think make it as long or as short as you want. And we appreciate the fact that you guys have an interest in our shows. So thank you very much for coming. I have free issues of the Word Balloon magazine. They're right by the exit. Please take one if you'd like. It's got some good transcriptions, but I wanted to give you guys something for coming out. So yeah, everyone,
look us up, check us out.
Yeah, please check us out.
Look for us online. Thanks again for coming.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.